So welcome, everyone, once again. And we are really delighted to be able to have this time together to learn about the history, the culture, and the traditions of Ukraine. I'm Miranda St. John Nicol. I'm the Director of Christian Concern for One World. And I'm here with my colleague, Joanna, who is the Refugee Networking Officer for Christian Concern for One World. We are an ecumenical charity that works with people across the Thames Valley on three core areas: climate change, standing alongside refugees, and fair trade and trade justice. And we are incredibly grateful today to be joined by two people who are uniquely qualified to help us to understand the context of current events in Ukraine and the context from which our many guests are coming. We are being joined by Alexandra Setko, who is the head teacher of the Ukrainian Reading School, and she will be giving us a presentation, and also by Mick Pollock, who is the deputy head of the Association of Ukrainians in Great Britain for the Reading branch and is associated with the Ukrainian Cultural Center, Community Center there. So I think that without further ado, I'll just explain a little bit about how this will work, and then we'll be handing over to Mick. We have decided to run this as a webinar. There are quite a few people coming, and we thought that there would be fewer distractions and everyone would be able to focus. But we are really hoping that we will have a lot of interaction in question and answer. And you can pose your questions using the question and answer facility marked Q&A at the bottom of your screen. And if you put your question in there, we will be giving your questions to Alexandra and Mick later on in the session. So please do pose your questions. As was mentioned earlier on, we are recording this session because there are people who some have to leave early and some weren't able to come. And so the session will be available. I don't think there is anything else that we need to cover in terms of ground rules. So I will hand over to you, Mick.
Thank you very much. I'll start off by saying that I was born here. I was born here in 1954. My mother and father, my mother came to Germany as a slave laborer, and my father was taken to Austria as a slave laborer. And they have said they came to the West thanks to Hitler, but remained thanks to Stalin. I learned English when I went to school for the first time. If I'd like to just read a little poem that was written by our great poet, Garashilchenko, who was born in 1814 and died in 1861. Now, these words are so prophetic and so pertinent now. You'll be pleased to hear it's in, I'll do it in English, although if you can, you can have it in Ukraine because it sounds nicer in Ukraine. In our house is our truth, strength and freedom. Our soul cannot die, nor our freedom. Our thought, our song won't die, won't perish. Their people is our glory. Glory to Ukraine. People settled in this part of the world, and in fact in the United Kingdom, thanks to Clement Attlee's government, who allowed displaced persons to come over here, contrary to what the popular thought at the time was, that the soldiers should come home before displaced persons. Clement Attlee ignored that and allowed the displaced people to come and settle. And there were major staging posts throughout the country, and there was a big one in Bicester. And what then happened, as people were able to integrate into the smaller displaced persons camps, there was one at Didcot, and there's another one near Aldermaston in Graysley Green. That's where they lived. And then eventually when they were able to find jobs, which is what they had to do first, they were then allowed to go out into the community and initially had to report to the police station on a weekly basis and then subsequently on a monthly basis. So that, if you like, is the brief history of how we got here. Why we stayed was, of course, because we couldn't go home. And my mother told me when I was a little child, I'll never forget, we got a letter from home to say that my grandfather had died. And she tearfully said, "Well, my son, you won't be able to go home. Maybe your grandchildren will." Well, I'm lucky that I was able to visit Ukraine. I'm sad that my mum and dad are gone. But in another way, I'm pleased they're not here to see exactly what's happening to our homeland, that we've got to do it all again. I can touch on later on about the various elements of the referendum that we had that gave Ukraine independence back in 1991, where 32 million voted out of 38 million eligible. Now, on that basis, when we got a 29 million vote for yes, I fail to understand why President Putin is saying that we as a nation, we as a people, do not have the right to exist because that referendum was not a legal entity. And therefore, as a people, we don't have a right to exist. I'll hand over to Alexandra, who can give you some of how we got to where we are today. And perhaps you'll fully more appreciate why we are so concerned, not just because of what's happening to our country today, but what's going to happen to our country in the future, given the history of where we've come from. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mick, for this introduction into the history of Ukrainians in the Great Britain. And thank you very much, Miranda and Joanna, for organizing this event and for inviting us. I think it's very important to speak, to communicate to other people, because if we don't communicate, we would never know, right? So I prepared the presentation, which I hope is not way too big. And I know you people are most likely tired coming after the long working week. And it's really appreciated that you are here with us. I hope that little box on top of your screens will disappear very soon, as it should. Here is our Reading Ukrainian Community Center, and that center we have both Ukrainian club and we have Ukrainian school. And if you don't mind, I will start probably from Ukrainian school in Reading, which was founded 3 years ago. It was founded in February 2019. I'm trying to get rid of silly meeting control panel. That's better, so that you can see everything nicely. We named our school after consultation with children, with students and parents and teachers. We decided to select name Lastivka, which in Ukrainian means swallow. Swallow is a bird which in Ukrainian brings hope, brings new life, brings new year. And it's a traveling bird like ourselves. We are far away from homeland, but we all the time come back. You actually know the context, but you don't know that you know about that. All of you have beloved Christmas carols, and in the top 10 list of Christmas carols in the UK is that tune. That what you know as Carol of the Bells is the Ukrainian carol, very old. It's more than 1,000 years old. It's one of those songs which survived our times, which is actually about this follow trip back home and bringing new hope, bringing prosperity to families, bringing new year and new life. In our school, we have 4 years at the moment. It's very young school. We have preschool with younger children who just start learning Ukrainian as their heritage language. Year one has children from 6 to 7, in year 2, they're 8 to 9, and year 3 is most mixed. There are children from 7 to 13 years old, but they're all very proficient in Ukrainian. That's why they all appeared in the same year. What do we do in school? We learn Where is my controls? Yes, the long Ukrainian language and how it's written, Ukrainska mova, Ukrainian language. We touch also upon Ukrainian literature as much as we can on Saturdays because it's a Saturday supplementary school. We learn about geography of Ukraine. So we, for sure, geography is not limited to Ukraine, but living in the United Kingdom, children go to mainstream school and they will learn about geography of the world there. What we do, we give them deeper insight into how Ukraine is built. So we learn about geography of Ukraine and we learn history of Ukraine. And all of this in context is also bringing traditions and culture of Ukrainian people. For example, so very recently we had Easter, and preparing for Easter, we had a traditional Easter egg decoration sessions. Traditional Easter egg for Easter in Ukraine is called pysanka. Pysanka comes from the word ripe. So ripe, pysaty, gives us new word pysanka when we write on the egg. In the olden times, all these pictures which you see on eggs, they actually come from even prehistoric times, even before Ukraine was anyhow anywhere in the plan. But they actually mean words. It's the word text writing similar somewhat to Chinese writing or to Egyptian writing, but it was even older in countries which don't exist anymore, and majority of these signs are forgotten their meaning. But those which were remembered, people were writing each other for Easter, they were writing Easter cards. So literally, pysanka, it's writing on the egg, wishing prosperity to each other, wishing children, wishing happiness. Now we can also add writing in the Novaday languages, so that what we do with children. And then we go to bless eggs and paskas, Easter cakes, and other food. We go to ask for blessing on Easter liturgy. It's a very, very beautiful traditional style liturgy where the priest is blessing food for people to eat during their Easter dinner in the end of the Mass. And here I just wanted to tell you, Ukrainian Easter cake is called Pasca, and it's very similar to Italian panettone cake. Italians eat panettone for Christmas. But I strongly suspect that in those very old times, most likely of Byzantine Empire, when Ukraine took Christianity, so Easter cakes, those Christmas cakes, which were sent to Ukraine or Kyiv at that time, arrived just on Easter. And that's why they bear the name of Pasca. Pasca in Italian, Easter is called Pasca. But there are panettone, there are Christmas cakes. Nonetheless, tradition somehow very well rooted in Ukraine, and it's alive even today. So people are baking Paschas, Easter cakes for Easter to symbolize body of Christ, for sure. Easter is not the only religious celebration which we have, and very popular celebration in Ukraine comes just before Christmas Day on December 19th, it's St. Nicholas Day. It's St. Nicholas who brings children presents in Ukraine. And we, every single year, 3 years in a row, we have a show of, it's a mixed nativity and traditional show, which children prepare for St. Nicholas, for Mykolai, so that Mykolai would give them presents for their play. And surely after St. Nicholas gives them presents, shortly after we celebrate Christmas. And Christmas is very big thing in Ukraine. Children are walking around singing carols. Like here you can see we were singing carols another year. Children get sweets and presents for singing carols in bags, which they bring around in houses, from house to house. It's very big in village areas, in countryside. sites, less so now in big industrial cities, but still it's very much loved tradition. And also we are making diduchs on East, on Christmas. Diduch is, if you like, it's the, literally grandfather's spirit. When you bring grandfather's spirits in your house, but just making these nice bouquets of grains and wild dry herbs, and that should mean bringing prosperity in your house as well for Christmas time. Also, we have a twin school in Ukrainian town called Zolochiv. Zolochiv is located in the west of Ukraine. We have this collaboration already for 2 years. We are meeting 3 or 4 times a year for what we call telebridges, where children share on something which they're really interested in. Like this is picture from an event which we devoted to poetry of Taras Shevchenko, but we also, children love to discuss what did they get for Christmas. They also loved to discuss what is the school meaning for them and when it starts and what do they do at school. So the children suggest topics for discussion and we provide them the platform for cultural exchange. Now I want to touch briefly upon Ukrainian people, language, culture, and history. So Ukraine is located in the east of Europe. The further on east, it's only Russia. We are surrounded with many neighbors, most of whom now support massively Ukrainian refugees and support Ukraine in the fight against Russian invasion. So if we look a little bit closer, we can see that in the middle of Ukraine, there is a major river, Ukrainian river called Dnipro, or sometimes it's called also Dnieper. And why this river is important, you will see a little bit later, I will show you. And the capital of Ukraine is located on the north. It's Kyiv, located on the north of Ukraine. And it's very historical, very old capital. So I will tell a little bit more about that as well. So that statistics is for 2019. You can see how many people consider themselves in which ethnic group. And majority of people in Ukraine consider themselves Ukrainian. It's nearly 80% of people consider themselves Ukrainian, and 17% would consider themselves ethnic Russians. Also, there are other nationalities, and not all of them are listed here, but it's just the first 10. And did this picture look differently in years from when Ukraine became independent from Soviet Union? Actually, not that much. If you look how many people consider themselves in which ethnic group, which happened in 1989, it basically was very similar distribution of population, how people consider themselves or who they are. And because there are so many people, sure, there are many languages, but the state language is Ukrainian, because the dominating population are Ukrainians. The state language is Ukrainian, which is an East Slavic language from Balto-Slavic family of languages. But there are for sure other languages spoken, and the major minority spoken language would be Russian. Also, there are other languages being spoken again. So when we look at Ukrainian alphabet, sure, it's very much different from English, from Latin alphabet. It's also different from Russian, which you wouldn't probably know because to see the difference, you need to know both, but it's different from Russian alphabet. And Ukrainian nowadays alphabet is built from Greek, Latin in and Cyrillic alphabets all together. So it's a mix and match, and that was actually merging for centuries, and only in 1574 the alphabet, more or less how we know it now, was finally sealed. And when also we look at distribution of religions of Ukraine, which mostly determine the culture, majority of people in Ukraine would consider themselves belonging to Eastern Orthodox tradition. So now saying Eastern Orthodox tradition, it doesn't only mean only one Orthodox church branch. It means many. Yeah. And also quite some people would be then Greek Catholics and Latin Catholics. So yes, let's take a little bit closer look at smaller presented religions. So we have about 1 million of Muslim people in Ukraine. Most of those people would be Crimean Tatars. They build beautiful mosques, and I'm afraid that this mosque probably doesn't exist anymore because the Sultan Suleiman Mosque was built in Mariupol, and we know that Mariupol mostly ceased to exist by now. That's another mosque in Bakhchisarai that was the capital of an ancient Crimea, which was for generations until actually 19th century. It was mostly belonging to Crimean Tatars. It's their historical area, which is now also occupied by Russia. So that's part history of Islam. And I just thought I show you one representative, very famous recently representative of Crimean Tatar people. It's the singer called Jamala, who in 2016 won Eurovision contest. So she was singing actually a song called 1944 about the genocide of Soviet Union against Crimean Tatar people, that how Crimea became predominantly Russian populated because the locals were exterminated. And then I also want to tell you a little bit about Jew people in Ukraine. There are also quite some Jew people living in Ukraine now, but not as many as Muslims. People who identify themselves as religious Jews, just about 43,000. But also maybe a million, maybe more of Jews were killed in Ukraine during the Second World War in the Holocaust disaster and the Holocaust genocide. And quite many, about 500,000, left a Soviet Union when it was dissoluted, left Ukraine when Soviet Union dissoluted. They went either to Israel or to Europe or to other countries in the world. But yes, quite many moved away. But what we know about famous Ukrainian Jews, it's actually President of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. He is a Jew. And in Ukraine and in the capital, so there are quite many synagogues which are practicing different branches of Jewish religion. So here you can see Brodsky Synagogue in Kyiv. It's just in the middle of the city, and obviously nobody is oppressing Jews for their religion either. So now talking about Christianity, I just want to show you the distribution of different branches of Christian churches across Ukraine. And predominantly it would be Ukrainian Orthodox Church of Kyiv Patriarchy, which is now blended in the Ukrainian Catholic Orthodox Church, a single one. It blends together with also Cephalic Orthodox Church in one. And another Orthodox denomination, which is more spread on East and South, it would be Ukrainian Orthodox Church, but under Moscow Patriarchy, which is rapidly changing now, rapidly changing picture now with a full-scale war, because, well, many people don't want anymore to have nothing with Russia, including religion as well. And on the west, we have quite big representation of Catholic Church, but it's Eastern tradition or Byzantine tradition. So that is quite big as well. And that tradition is very similar to Orthodox Church tradition as well. And just to show you some of very famous and old Orthodox churches and cathedrals, I selected Kyiv-Pechersk Lavra Monastery, which is considered to be the biggest and the oldest and the seed of Eastern Orthodox tradition in among Slav people in Eastern Europe. So that is recognized as the if you like, as a motherland for all Eastern Orthodox tradition among Slav people. It's a very big one for Eastern Europeans. another church which I wanted to show you in Kyiv as well. It's St. Sophia Cathedral. Both are, by the way, from 11th century, and I will show you why it's important, why I'm actually talking about 11th century in these cathedrals a bit later. And also in Lviv, I wanted to show you the Catholic tradition cathedral, St. George's Cathedral, that is from 13th century when Christianity, Western Christian tradition came into Western Ukraine. And also, for sure, it's not only about Ukrainian traditions, but there are other people living in Ukraine. And apparently it was a big influx of Armenian people, Armenian churches. And here you can see Armenian church from 14th century located in Crimea. Lots of Armenian people lived in Crimea those times, together with Greek people. It was actually predominantly built by Greeks, but Armenian people also made a big input in the culture and history of that region. So now a little bit of foundation of Kyiv. That is really important to understand what's going now and why Russia is claiming rights for Kyiv, for Russia, legacy, as they call it, because they had stolen name as well. So foundation of Kyiv and Kyiv Rus and how Christianity came to Ukraine. So in early years after Christ, so that between 300 and 600 years of, after Christ, so it was a big spread of Slavic people, which actually initially were focused here around actually Kyiv area between rivers Dnieper and Dniester. So they suddenly, they had good conditions to expand, and they were expanding a lot on the west. Quite some were expanding on south and formed then countries which Slavic countries which are now in the former Yugoslavia countries, and now it's Poland and Czech Republic and Bulgaria. So all these tribes were moving, suddenly expanding all around the Europe. The interesting thing for us, me and you now in context, is that Kyiv was founded in 482 Anno Domini, and it was founded by Poland's tribe, one of clans, which was led by the man called Kij. That's why the name for Kyiv is Kyiv, the place of Kij. And Kij belonged to Poland's tribe. And I think the word is speaking for itself. When we look at who formed, which countries are formed by Poland and where they were expanding, they actually were expanding here. You can see Slavic Poles, they were expanding on the west, and they formed eventually Poland and Ukraine. So the Polish people, they are indeed closely related to Ukrainian people in thousands of years. Yeah, sorry for that. My child came back after her lessons, and yeah, she's quite happy. So yeah, so Ukraine and Poland are indeed related, and related from very early years of their foundations. But what about Moscow and Russia? It didn't exist. Those times, it was still roughly 500 years to Moscow being founded, and it actually wasn't a place where Slavic people would expand. It not at that time, at least, not at early expansion of Slavs people. The Moscow was founded in places populated by different ethnicities. For sure, when Kyiv as a country was expanding, I will show you how it expanded on north. They were mixed with Rus people coming from Kyiv. But before Moscow was founded, Kyiv already existed for 500 years. And Poland as well. And another interesting fact, that Moscow was founded by Kievan prince, whose name was Yuri Dolgorukiy. And he was the youngest son of Vladimir Monomakh, who was at the time the great prince of Kyiv. And Vladimir Monomakh All his sons were fighting for his throne when he passed away. And Yuri Dolgoruki, being the youngest, still made it to the throne. So he actually was on the throne for not long period of time, and he died in Kyiv. And there is his grave in Kyiv-Pechersk Lavra, the oldest monastery in Ukraine, in Kyiv. And on the, his grave plate is written, I translated here, Yuri Dolgoruki, son of Vladimir Monomakh, prince of Kyiv, founder of Moscow, is buried here in this church. So he actually, the founder of Moscow was a Kyiv prince. So that's something interesting, but we jumped too much ahead in history. Let's come a little bit back to founders. So who brought Christianity to Ukraine? Who brought Christianity to Kyiv? That actually happened in 988, and it was done by Vladimir the Great. Here is his memorial in London, in Holland Park. So Vladimir the Great, ruler of Kyiv and Rus, the first great grand prince of Kyiv, and he brought Christianity to Rus. He actually did it in a very short period of time. He just decided for political reasons to take Christianity. He went for that to what called that time Tsargrad, and we know now as Constantinople. So he went there to take Christianity, Eastern tradition. At that time, it was not Orthodox. It was still all one Christian church. And he baptized all his people, first his family and his army, and then all people, regardless whether they wanted that or not. Another interesting legacy which he left to Ukraine is his coat of arms. So there is coat of arms of Ukraine, a trident, and it's trident which came from Vladimir the Great. He introduced it, his trident, on money which were done at his regency time. And all his heirs then had tridents in as their coat of arms, slightly modified for their names, but still the trident comes from Vladimir the Great, ruler of Kyiv and Rus in between 980 to 1015. And his son, it would be the last historical person whom I'm talking about, his son Yaroslav the Wise, it's actually he maximized his father's inheritance. He made Kyiv and Rus the biggest country in Europe of that time. And it was spread from the Black Sea to the Baltic Sea on north. And why then here Dnieper becomes important? It because it helped Varangian, so Vikings, tribes, it helped them their trade from Baltic Sea with Constantinople, with Byzantium Empire, and the trade was mostly done via Dnieper River, via the main river, mainstream of Ukraine. And that pretty much comes from the north to the south, connecting Baltic Sea and Black Sea. It doesn't start from Baltic Sea. It was some route on land. But then when Dnieper starts, it all the time was done by the river. And he was famous for St. Sophia Cathedral. It was his personal family cathedral, which he built for his family, from which we actually know that he had four daughters. It's the old fresco of his daughters. He had also a son, but son didn't become massively famous. His daughters, though, did. Three of them became queens of different European countries. And here I show you Elisaveta of Kyiv. She was his oldest daughter, and she became queen of Norway and Denmark. Anastasia of Kyiv was queen of Hungary, and the most famous was Anne of Kyiv, queen of France. She was ruling France for more than 10 years. She actually brought to France interesting thin table manners, because knife and fork were not there known before her coming. And she, her family had these traditions from the Byzantine Empire, actually. And she also founded the first in Europe school for girls in France, for nobility. So that's, I think, I hope that was interesting introduction. And the whole history time from Rus to nowadays, I would rather cover in words just to save some time. So generally speaking, after those glorious times, it was a long-lasting tragedy caused by Mongolian invasion, by Genghis Khan invasion, who destroyed lots of Ukrainian legacy. He burned the biggest in Europe library, which was placed in Kiev and was founded by Yaroslav the Wise. The area of Kiev Rus was then split and distributed between different countries. So probably the biggest part then in history and culture of Ukraine was shaped by Lithuanian Duchy, which was for a long time taking Ukraine in itself and ruling it for a long time. Then it was Polish Kingdom. But meanwhile, some parts of Ukraine, mostly central and southern parts, they still had a lot of autonomy and independence, where the first, actually in Europe, republic was formed. And it was an interesting republic because it was military-ruled republic by people who we know as Cossacks. By the way, there is no such thing like Russian Cossacks. The Cossacks were built there as a legacy of Kiev Rus. And they formed that democracy, which was called Sich. Sich was military-run democracy where the president, which at the time was called Kosh Ataman, was elected among Cossacks. And he was elected for every 5 years on the meeting places, meeting points, or meeting forums called Maidans. So word Maidan comes from that time. That was place where the Kosh Ataman, so president, was elected, where they could tell him quorum of no trust and take him down, and where the presidents were given public speeches and were re-elected again. So Maidan comes from those times. You heard words Maidans. It's nowadays Ukrainian fights against, let's say, unfaithful government. So that comes from that time. And let me please tell you about another historical scene which shaped a lot what Ukraine is today. And that happened last century, the first half of last century, the genocide of Ukrainians people by death by starvation, which is called Holodomor, or rather Holodomors. And it affected enormously geography of Ukraine. We commemorate it every third Saturday of November. We put candles on windows. We talk about grains because in that time, even having one wheat grain from the field would mean death sentence. And there were lots of crops in Ukraine. It wasn't that Ukraine wouldn't produce enough crops. They were taken away from people, not only crops, everything, all livestock. And they were taken in such big quantities to Russia that it wasn't possible to utilize it all. And lots were thrown away in the sea. And they even documentary movies, videos showing how that crops are thrown in the sea. But it was a purpose. Purpose was to destroy not obedient Ukrainians who didn't want to stay under Soviet Union rule. And here is a memorial devoted to Holodomor genocide in Kyiv, and it's a place where people bring apples and bread and candles when we commemorate the genocide. And there were three genocides, so the worst one, 1932 to 1934. And in the red here, you can see areas the most affected, where majority of people died. You can see numbers here. It's total excess deaths. The real numbers is very difficult to estimate because so many people died that it was difficult to count them because there were nobody left to count. But when you look at the areas represented, they were actually heavily Ukrainian dominated areas where people would speak Ukrainian as a main language and consider themselves ethnic Ukrainians. And when we look a little bit broader map and distribution, again, in red here, it's the places where more than 25% of people died. And you can see here is a part which is at that time already was belonging to Russian Socialistic Republic, but that was a historically Ukrainian populated part by Cossacks, by descendants of Cossacks from Sich, which I mentioned before, Democratic Military Republic. And the death toll was so high that those were literally becoming, well, empty areas. Where then further, after the Second World War, the areas were repopulated by people brought mostly from Russia, by political prisoners, by criminal prisoners, and also in part by people from Belarus and people from western parts of Ukraine, which at the time of Holodomor were not parts of Soviet Union, but with onset of Second World War, when Soviet Union started Second World War together with Nazi Germany, and they were dividing Europe among themselves. So this part Soviet Union gained for itself, and people were then massively put to the Eastern Ukraine to assimilate them with other Soviet people. So that's how it shaped a lot geography, population, and history of Ukraine for many years, and language balance, actually language background. The Ukrainian language bearers died by starvation, and instead Russian speakers were brought to live in their homes. And international recognition of Holodomor as genocide is not yet complete, but here on the map you can see countries which recognized Holodomor either as a genocide or as a crime against humanity by Stalin's regime. So now let's talk about something more pleasant, about culture leaders and famous artists, composers, and poets of Ukraine. So Mykola Leontovich wrote actually the Carol of the Bells, as you know it, Lastivka, Shidrivochka. I cannot play it. I was warned that we will have problems with video, so we skip it. But then, so Ukraine also has plenty of very famous, world famous artists. I cannot show you everyone, but I thought I would show you a couple of stolen. Russia claims they were Russian artists, but they actually were not only Ukraine born, they considered themselves Ukrainians, and they actually were doing lots of their painting works devoted to Ukrainian topics. It's Ilya Repin and Kazimir Malevich. And also, I wanted to show you two ladies, Maria Primachenko, and she actually her paintings were in the most of all famous museums, including Louvre, for exhibitions. And another artist, now to my shame, I didn't put her name here. Obviously something slipped off my mind. Her surname was Ponomarenko, and she died very recently. She died of starvation in Russian-occupied Bucha. She was about 90 years old. She is quite famous in Ukraine, and she is known in the world as one of the top artists of nowadays, and she died being 90 years old, died of starvation recently in Russian-occupied Bucha. Also, there are poets and singers and composers in Ukraine. You already heard words of Taras Shevchenko. He is the most famous Ukrainian poet. His poems are translated in English and many other languages. He was also an artist. And Ivan Kotlyarevsky wrote two operas in Ukrainian, and one of them, Natalka Poltavka, is still massively popular and played in opera houses in Ukraine. Talking about opera, there are two famous opera singers. One of them, Salomea Krushelnitska, she was the prima in La Scala in Milan, and Vasil Slipak, who was finally last place he saw was Paris Opera Theater, But when war started in 2014, Russians occupied Donbass, he decided he wants to fight for his country, went there, and sadly he was killed in action. There was a famous composer, Mykola Lysenko, and probably those of you who love classic music heard his compositions. Some of those are listed here. So being aware of time, and I was asked to present you some food. So among the favorites are borscht, vareniki, holubtsi, and deruni. Although they talking, Ukraine is such a big country, there are so many different food traditions and cuisines. It's not possible to talk about everything, but these are known all across Ukraine. Here we are making vareniki, so they are dumplings filled with whatever you want. Actually, literally, you can fill it with berries. We were making vareniki with sour cherries. You can fill it with cheese. Here is cheese as well. You can make them sweet. You can make them savory. We were also making vareniki with potatoes here. And from time to time, we have such events for community in our Ukrainian center. We make them together, cook them together, eat them together, have a lot. Time and they're massively popular. Borscht is a beetroot soup. I know that many British people don't like beetroot, but I all the time say my husband already knows, he just don't know how to cook it. If you cook it properly, it's extremely delicious. And borscht is actually highly popular. The main ingredients for borscht would be beetroot, carrots, cabbage, potatoes, and onion. And then up to your imagination. People put meat in it. People make it meat-free, do it with kidney beans, do it with prunes, do it with mushrooms. Wild mushrooms are popular for borscht. Even do it with fish. So there are tons and many varieties of borscht. And in Ukraine, they're very popular so-called borscht festival or borscht events when people make absolutely different varieties of borscht and do just big tasters and have lots of fun together. And then it's also holubtsi, which are cabbage rolls with, again, traditionally it's meat or meat mixed with rice inside them. But they can be also vegetarian varieties, and they're also very popular. And there are plenty and many, and in different regions they cook them differently. Deruni potato pancakes is the last thing I wanted to show, because if you would travel to Ukraine ever, so you can get them for, they're popular both for breakfast and for dinner. You can be served them. So they are also cooked in different variations. The simplest one, it's potatoes, onions, egg, and they are fried and eaten with sour cream. But they also can be baked in pots. They can be baked with mushrooms. They can be prepared in many different ways. Here you can't see meat variety, but the meat can be added. So it's another very popular cuisine. And that's it for me. I hope you are not too tired, and I apologize for overtaking time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Alexandra. And it's a huge privilege for all of us to be able to hear from you and to be able to get a sense of the things that you think are the most important for us to know. That's something we really appreciate. We do have a number of questions that have come out of your presentation. And so I am just seeing if I can work out the spotlighting, and it's not working. So I'm just going to go to the questions. One of them was about the Reading Ukraine School. Mick's already answered that, and he's already answered the questions also about the Orthodox Easter and the fact that it's at a different time that's based on the Julian calendar and Christmas. And is that also the Julian calendar, Nick? Is that why it's on the 7th of January, the Ukrainian Christmas?
Yeah, that's right. It's just part of the old style tradition. In fact, those of us that were born here, live here, we have two Christmases and we have two Easters.
So the best of both worlds. And then we had a question about the genocide, which countries recognized the genocide. And I believe it was the red countries in red that recognized it. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, countries in red recognized. Yeah.
And Mix noted that unfortunately Great Britain is not one of them. And then a really helpful question from Jane about the tendency sometimes to hear people talk about the Ukraine, which does indeed stem from the Soviet days, doesn't it? And in fact, we should always be saying Ukraine. Any further comment on that?
Well, I think it stems from English. It stems from English language and confusions. So because it's the United Kingdom, the UK, United States of America, right? But those are collective names. The USA, because it's United States of America. The United Kingdom, because it's the UK, because it's United Kingdom. But Ukraine, it's not collective, it's a word. So you wouldn't apply the France. But because of similarity in how it sounds, I think people just automatically apply the in front of Ukraine, not because of Soviet times this time. Soviet did many bad things, but not this one.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
But Alexandra, I also think as a result of that, because you're absolutely right when you talk about the collective, the reason why in this country people were talking about the Ukraine is because it's a principle that was seen as part of the USSR collective. So that's why we wouldn't say the England. Although, funny enough, they sometimes do say the France, but I don't know.
Then a really helpful question that's just come up, two really helpful questions. One is the sort of numbers of people in Ukraine who practice religion or numbers who have no religion. Any thoughts on that?
It was on this slide, yeah, but I think it's difficult, too many slides to comprehend. Majority do practice. There are very few who do not practice. And I think that's a swing after Soviet Union. You know, what was prohibited in Soviet Union, that because it was prohibited and oppressed, it became very attractive after Soviet Union collapsed. So majority do practice religion.
And then an amazingly helpful question as we welcome people, which is around the questions of what UK customs or behaviours might someone coming in from Ukraine find a little bit odd? What are the things where people might need to do a little bridging so that people can understand each other?
I think there would be lots of things not misunderstood and not completely understood from both sides, because there are similarities in cultures. After all, culture of United Kingdom and traditions are coming from Christendom. Even though now maybe not so many people would consider themselves Christians, they still even like celebrating Christmas and the New Year. It's a Christian tradition. So there would be similarities from that side, you know, because it's still the same big culture based on religion. So if even religion is not counted now. But I would say, so Ukrainians would find it very difficult in communication because for whatever reasons, it would be not that much of team. Also, right now, Ukrainians show brilliant teamwork. But let's say Ukrainians are brilliant in teamwork in very hard times. Then suddenly everyone forgets about all quarrels and arguments, and everyone starts working together. And it happened all the time through the history of Ukraine. So Ukrainians are very good to build like the solid conglomerate of people and nation when they are in really big struggle. But otherwise, there is even a saying that my house from the end of the village and I don't want to know nothing. So literally everyone for themselves. And what I found in the UK, so networking, team working is a very big thing. It's a very big part of culture. And if you are not familiar with this concept, it's very difficult to grasp it. It's like, you know, there would be some struggles with this integration. Yeah.
One of the things that used to be said, but still does say, if you've got two Ukrainians, you'll have five arguments. I know Ukrainians who can have an argument on his own. I let Alexandra answer that because, of course, there is nothing strange or weird about the English culture and tradition, because it's been my culture and tradition for 54 years. One thing that I did have when people started coming to me in the early 80s, they couldn't, and Alexandra might confirm this, one of the things about going to a shop, when you go shopping, they couldn't understand, this is my English friends or Ukrainian friends that came to England, how polite the sales staff were, how they would say please and thank you all the time. Whereas it, when you go, I'm sure it's not like that now, although it was when I was in Lviv 5 years ago, it's almost as if you're doing them a favour by shopping. But that's the only sort of difference. But gradually they're learning this thing about please and thank you. So don't be too upset if you've given something to a Ukrainian and they may not, and they won't give you full of the please and thank yous. So that's not their way.
That's very true. And another thing came across my mind, and I already heard quite some complaints, remarks about that. So according to European standard and Ukrainian standard of building, British houses are very small and poorly insulated. And people who come here, they're kind of like, but how come? So how rooms are so small? How that happens? And they're coming from country where winters are colder, but summers are so much hotter. Summers are like nearly Mediterranean climate. And thus it would be difficult. It's not about people, but about climate. Quite some find it difficult to adapt to climate and temperature in houses.
Thank you. And as an organization that works on climate, we'll just take that plug for more insulation too. So thank you very much on that one. We have three final questions before we stop. And I'll just give those out to you. One is, would you say men and women in Ukrainian society have more traditional roles than in the UK, or is it similar? Why don't you take that one, and then we'll take the other two.
Mm-hmm. It's, I would say, no. Depends what do you think in the traditional society. Well, generally, the culture of Ukraine was pretty much different of culture, even its neighboring countries, even during medieval times, where women had her own rights and her own property. And because of military republic and men were gathered away in their own built republic and playing their own presidential elections, ladies were maintaining the household, and it became so that women had all the time much more rights in families than in other neighboring countries. So let's put it that way. It's expected that the man of any age would be responsible to defend his family and his land. Ladies can also join defendants, but it's their choice rather than, let's say, moral obligation. But when children go in education, and those of you who are teachers here, you should understand that Ukrainians are very mad on high standard of education, and they would push their children really heavily for education and getting degree. And that would be both for boys and girls. There would be no mercy on both. Parents would be push and press on both to get higher in the society and to get into university education. That would be a very big thing.
And that feeds into the other question, which Mick has also given an answer to in the chat, about the proportion of Ukrainians who would speak English and what languages are taught in Ukrainian schools. I don't know either Mick or Alexandra if you just want to add anything on that.
So English it would be the most popular foreign language in Ukrainian schools after Russian. So Russian is not a state language, but still before the escalation of war, because it's not the beginning of war, but the escalation of war, 8 years war already. So before that, quite some parents would decide that they want their children also to learn Russian, and by decision of parent committees, it that would be done at schools as well. And then Russian probably would be the first one, a foreign language taught at schools, as not as a foreign, but heritage language. If foreign, then English would be the most popular, then would come German and Chinese, but definitely not as massive as English. But English is taught maybe on the same level as English people are taught French. So how many English people can speak French after they are graduated? So I suspect not many. So likewise, Ukrainians are taught English. They're familiar with concept. Not necessarily they would speak English.
Thank you. And thank you for all of that. I will end with, I think, a brilliant question and a brilliant answer from Mick, where he was asked, do Ukrainians appreciate sarcasm? And the response was a very simple, oh, yes.
I can perhaps, I'm not sure whether you'd call it sarcasm or not. There's a Ukrainian saying about whenever anybody says, oh, I was thinking about that. And the Ukrainian answer is, indik dumo kapopal bors. So the turkey thought still ended up in the stew. So whether that's sarcastic or not, but there is the other old joke about the guy, definition of a confused, and this is obviously during the Soviet days, definition of a confused person is a man standing in the middle of the road with an empty shopping bag, and he can't remember whether he's been to the shops or coming back from the shops.
Thank you for that. And thank you again, both of you, so, so much. A huge privilege to have your perspective and to have your wisdom. And we are so grateful. I'm going to hand over to Joanna, who will share briefly a couple of the resources that we have for people who are welcoming Ukrainian guests and supporting hosts and Ukrainians in the community. And some of these are ones that we've done in consultation with Alexandra, including, Joanna, will you mention our welcome pack and other things?
Yes. So you should hopefully be able to see our Ukraine page on our website, which has all sorts of useful resources, including a map of groups. And I'll give you the link in a moment for if you want to be added to that map for your group or church. Lots of resources for hosts and people supporting hosts and guests. As Miranda said, we are, for example, there's a welcome pack from organization Vita there. We're also preparing a welcome leaflet, an info sheet, which churches can use to welcome Ukrainians. And there are Ukrainian and English worship resources there. And this is also very helpful, prepared by suggestions from Alexandra and colleagues, amongst others, a welcome basket for cooking, something maybe churches or others might want to do, suggested contents for such a basket that will be really appreciated as people wait for their benefits or jobs to finances to kick in. Have a look yourselves on the website, lots of other useful things. And otherwise, just to say, please do also keep in touch with us. I'm just going to see if I can share another screen. One second. That's one. Yeah. Can people see that? Do keep in touch. You can email me, joanna@cacao.org.uk. We produce a quarterly refugee support newsletter, so not just about Ukrainian refugees, but refugees in general for people in the Thames Valley area. And you can see examples of previous newsletters on our webpage. If you'd like to receive that, you can sign up at the link there. And I'll put these in the chat in a second. And also, if you would like to be added to the map on our Ukraine page for your church or community group, please just fill in the short form at that link there. I'll put those in the chat now. Yeah, I think that's great. And just put that in the chat. 1 second.
Yeah. Thank you, Joanna. And while you're doing that, we thought that it would be really lovely to end with a prayer. So Alexandra is going to lead us in the Lord's Prayer, which we're going to have up on our screen in both Ukrainian and English.
Отче наш, єси на небесах, нехай святиться ім'я Твоє, хай прийде царство Твоє, нехай буде воля Твоя, як на небі, так і на землі. Хліб наш насущний дай нам сьогодні, і прости нам провини наші, як і ми прощаємо винуватцям нашим. І не веди нас у спокусу, але визволи нас від лукавого, бо Твоє є царство і сила і слава навіки. Амінь.
Thank you again, Mick and Alexandra, and thank you all for coming, for being part of this, for your questions. If you have any other questions, do feel free to email Joanna. I see there's one that has come in now from Sandy, and Mick and Alexandra, if you would be willing to sort of stay around for that, just to answer that question before people go, or before Sandy goes. But we'll finish the formal session now, and thank you so much.